Mini episode 639 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by First Down Scouting, delivering the most thorough scouting service available, uncovering the NFL stars of tomorrow. Follow them on the web at the number one, stdownscouting.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 639. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with our preview of Fargo Episode 2.6 titled Rhinoceros. Here's our top five developments from episode 2.5 heading into this installment. Number five, in the most explosive episode yet, game-changing events bookended superlative character studies. The ambush on the Kansas City Hunters, juxtaposed with the Reagan campaign speech, was a chilling piece of cinematography that shockingly took out Joe Bulow and one of the Kitchen brothers, and actually it was apparently both of them on initial viewing. After this main event-worthy moment, plenty of fine character snapshots preceded another incredible development. Charlie and the Gerhardt family soldier failing to kill Ed in the back of the butcher shop, leading to the conflagration that took it down. After KC took the early lead in the gang war, the Gerhardts struck back decisively in the woods but took a big defeat in Laverne, the extent of which nobody even realizes yet. In between, key players on both sides were dealing with the ramifications of their setbacks and demonstrating their capabilities and limitations under extreme pressure. Significant blood has now been shed on both sides, and towards the end, the gore came home to Lou and Hank's doorstep again. We're now well into a delicious cycle of dramatic actions, leading to dramatic reactions, leading to an ever-increasing escalation of hostilities. Continuing to top what we've already seen is getting so much more difficult. Number four, the contrast of the hope of the Reagan appearance with the depths of despair roused by the gang war points to an interesting direction for future events. The Fargoverse circa 1979 is populated by people who are struggling through tough times, even in the absence of larger drama, so the positivity engendered by Reagan's shining city on a hill optimism demonstrated how much people wanted to believe in the possibility of better days. We know in hindsight that the country was in the last days of a period of prolonged gloom dating back to the JFK assassination, similar in some ways to our present post-9/11 malaise, but that many people remained resilient, ready to believe that things could get better. Everyman Lou showed as much in his touching but bizarre restroom tete-a-tete with Reagan. As with the country, which was about to experience the Iran hostage crisis, things in the show's universe are about to get worse before they get better. But the resolve shown by Lou and Hank will be crucial to the resolution of the tale. Number three, the title of the last episode portended a real surprise. Peggy's first instance this season of treating her husband as a real partner rather than someone to be manipulated. As it turns out, the gift of the Magi referred to her surprising decision to reciprocate Ed's devotion by selling her car to help pay for the butcher shop down payment. Of course, this was immediately after she was ready to split town without him and after she had previously spent his down payment money, surreptitiously taken birth control and beseeched him to suffer whiplash to cover up her hit and run, so let's keep her sacrifice in perspective. In keeping with the old fable, however, her gesture was useless because the chain of events that she initiated by crashing into Rye has now resulted in the butcher shop burning down. As we move through this fascinating journey with these characters, previously obscured layers are now coming to the surface. The selfish and callow Peggy is now demonstrating at least a minimum level of wifely responsibility, while the formerly naive Ed is developing surprising survival instincts in the face of their targeting by the Fargo clan. Together, they might make a surprisingly resourceful team in the face of their ever-growing danger, but they face grave obstacles, being caught in the crosshairs of both the law and the worst that the Gerhardts can possibly send their way. Number two, Mike Milligan assumes center stage. With Joe Bulow's head having been delivered to him in a box, it goes without saying that he doesn't have any local supervision on the ground anymore. Kansas City may send up reinforcements, but they are sure to realize that Mike's presence in the woods alone may have been enough to thwart Ohanzi's plans. All signs point to Mike's leadership role in this war expanding dramatically, and he's sure to bring dimensions to the fight that will really shake up the Gerhardts. Actually, unbeknownst to them, he already has, in the form of his weird and dangerous secret relationship with Simone. Number one, the internal politics and dynamics of the Gerhardt crime family now appear as though they'll be decisive in determining exactly how this mob war ends. Again, Simone started her affair with Mike as a means of revenge on her father, but now she's in a position where she has to be disloyal to the whole family, especially her grandmother, who is her prime defender. Bear suspects that Ohanzi was manipulated by Dodd to kayfabe Ed as an agent of Kansas City to ensure that any last chance for peace is snuffed out, and it's clear that Dodd is territorial in regards to keeping Bear and Ohanzi apart. You can imagine how PO'd Bear is going to be when he finds out that Dodd got his disabled son shot and thrown in jail. The brief truce between Floyd and Dodd already appears over, even before she finds out about his lies and secrets, so things could get to a very weird place before too long. And all of this leaves aside one of the biggest, most intriguing questions raised to date. Why did Ohanzi surprisingly spare one of the Kitchen brothers? Was it as simple as sending him back with Joe's head to send a message? Or has the inscrutable operative, who operates just outside the full, accepting bosom of the family, decided to cut his own deal with Kansas City? If Ohanzi has gone double agent, or if he does subsequently, think about all the information from both sides that he will possess, not least of which Simone's betrayal of the family. On the surface, he's far too rational of a man to believe wholeheartedly in the direction of a maniac like Dodd. If he has come to determine that his boss is an albatross, his myriad of options with different players in this war could take the story in countless exciting directions. As it is, now halfway through, it's been one of the best series on TV in a long, long time, and we look forward to navigating the second half of the journey. Thank you for tuning in to this mini-episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.